Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jeff Currier, and he'll be answering your most important questions on peacock, bass, and other Brazilian treasures. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your questions immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so that you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Jeff Currier about peacock bass and other Brazilian treasures. Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida and the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. You can find out more information on the Federation of Fly Fishers at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Jeff, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Jeff's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away an autographed and remarked copy of Jeff's book, Currier's Quick and Easy Guide to Warm Water Fishing. And if you don't know what remarked is, that's where the author, and in this case artist, does a little sketch or a little drawing or some little doodle on the book and makes it extra special for you. So this will be a great prize to win tonight, so pay attention. And here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. If the question will be about something Jeff and I talk about during the show, you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills and maybe you'll win Jeff's book. Tonight our guest is Jeff Currier. Jeff resides in Victor, Idaho with his wife Yvonne, where he bases his globetrotting career in fly fishing. He is an active member of the Ross Professional Advisory Team, Rio Products Advisory Team, a fly fishing lecturer, and well-known fish artist. He has taught the skills of fly fishing, guided fly fishers throughout Wyoming and Yellowstone National Park, and escorted fly fishers on six continents. Jeff is a well-sought-after expert for television, appearing on Fishing the West, Fly Fishing the World, In Search of Fly Water, Real Adventures, Fly Fish TV, and Fly Fish America. Keep an eye out for Confluence Films' next movie, Connect, where Jeff is part of an incredible segment catching enormous tiger fish in Tanzania, as well as a Burrow Productions film, Soulfish 2, where Jeff and friends document an expedition in search of Taimen in Mongolia. Jeff's articles and photographs have graced the pages of magazines, catalogs, brochures, and books. Jeff is an acclaimed author of Currier's Quick and Easy Guide to Saltwater Fishing and Currier's Quick and Easy Guide to Warmwater Fly Fishing. When not fishing or writing, Jeff is usually found working in one of his favorite hobbies, painting fish. His fish art decorates Sims T-shirts, fly reels, coffee mugs, books, magazines, and his original watercolors are always in high demand. Although Jeff spends much of his time fly fishing for trout, he's a walking encyclopedia of fly fishing for species worldwide. He is constantly traveling and developing techniques for catching the most exotic fish imaginable in places where even the most avid adventurer refuses to go. This IGFA world record holder and National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame record holder has fished in over 40 countries and caught over 275 species of fish on the fly. Jeff, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's, gosh, is this the fifth show we've done, I think? Something like that. I'm starting to lose track.
Every year we do one.
Every year. I want to check in just with folks out there to make sure that they can hear us, being that we're using a kind of a new system tonight. So if you're out there and can hear me, could you go to the homepage and just in that text box say, yeah, I can hear you, or yes, or something, just to know we're all connected tonight. That would really make me feel more comfortable. So if you're there, say hello, and we'll continue on. We're still waiting for somebody to type in here. Anybody out there? Okay, good. Can hear you, Jeff and Roger. Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. Okay, Jeff. You had me scared there for a minute, but looks like we're all set to go. So let's dive in here. We've got lots of things to cover tonight. We're talking about primarily peacock bass, but we're gonna mix in later at the end some of the other fish you've caught in search of peacock, or even before you find the peacock. So let's start out with talking about peacock. And you've traveled to Brazil, Panama, and Venezuela, all three of which you've caught peacock bass in, correct?
That's right.
And did you go there specifically for peacock, or did you, you know, were in search of other fish at the time? Just stumble on them, or?
You know, the only place I really stumbled on them was I went to Panama to fish for sailfish, but I was there for a month with my wife, and we were just kind of trucking around the country and riding the buses, having a good time. And I heard through the grapevine that there were some peacock bass in the canal itself. There's actually a kind of a lake in the middle of the canal called Lago Gatun. And as soon as I heard there were peacocks in there, I had to check it out. So my wife and I, we found a guy to take us fishing, and we spent 2 days there, and we caught quite a few of them. It's the species there. There's, you know, we'll get to it a little later today, I'm sure, but there's many different species of peacock bass. The species that's there is known as the gray bar or the fire belly, and they don't get bigger than about 8 pounds. But, heck, we had a great time, you know, just beat them up. And haven't been back there again, probably because the truth of the matter is the big boys live in South America. And my trip to Venezuela, I should mention that, too, that wasn't specifically a peacock bass trip. We did a little bone fishing and tarpon fishing in the ocean, and then we went into the jungle to fish for payara, which is those fish with the great big teeth that go right into their skull. I mean, literally like 2 inches long. And when we were catching payara, we got into the peacocks pretty good as well. So there's a lot of good peacock fishing there to be had. But every time I go to Brazil is a peacock bass trip, and that is probably the best peacock bass fishing in the world that I've found.
And where are the peacock bass, where are they originally from? Where are they native to?
They're natives of South America. They're natives to the Amazon drainage and an area called Amazonas. So they're in all the rivers that flow into the Amazon River itself, and they're in a lot of the tributaries that flow into the Orinoco River in Venezuela. So you will find them in Panama. They weren't native there. They were stocked, and you ironically will find them in the canals around Miami, too. They were stocked there, and I believe the ones that are stocked there are also the gray bars. There could be some butterflies, too, but they just don't get as big in the colder climates. I know it seems funny looking at Miami as a colder climate, but I'll tell you, in comparison to the year-round heat you get in the Amazon, it's definitely a little bit different.
Yeah. We had several questions about from Doug in Calgary, George in Alabama, David in Sarasota, all asking about peacocks in Florida. Now, have you fished for peacocks in Florida, or just aware of them, or what's your connection?
Unfortunately, I haven't, but I'm definitely aware of them. I just when I get that close to the Keys, I end up on a flats boat, so I haven't messed around yet. Hopefully one of these days I will, because I would love to be able to say I did it. But I would imagine that the fishing would be, you know, very similar. Because it's a smaller species and they don't grow as big, you know, in this continent, you probably get by fishing, you know, a 7-weight rod like you're fishing for largemouth bass. And the interesting thing would be is when you're fishing for those ones down in Miami, you're going to catch some largemouth bass as well. So it'd be kind of a neat little deal.
Yeah, and who knows what else. Yeah, I mean, Florida really is like just a wonderful place for all kinds of fishing, you know, freshwater. And I guess the only thing they don't have there, I don't think, is any trout anywhere. But, well, you can catch about anything else down there, I think, and considering the saltwater access as well. It's incredible. Yeah. So you already said you thought the best place to go for peacocks was Brazil, and it's a long way to go.
Yeah, but it's not bad. You know, you're there in 24 hours from Idaho. You know, I'll leave at 7 in the morning here, and you used to be able to get all the way to Manaus by midnight, but nowadays, you know, you have a pretty good layover depending on what you fly out of. In fact, if you go through Miami, usually you have to overnight in Miami and catch an early morning flight directly to Manaus, Brazil. But it's not that hard. You know, it's about 7,000 miles from here, and it sure is worth it.
Yeah, yeah. So what's involved in planning a trip? I know and you might tell us about this more later, too, but I know you host some trips down there and so forth. Kind of describe what it's like for a first-timer going down there and what they could expect.
Well, I definitely say the first time you want to go with somebody that knows what they're doing. And you're right, I do host trips down there because it is a different fish. You know, you're in an extremely wild environment that's, you know, we don't have anything like it here. It truly is the rainforest. So, you know, I tell people if you want to go, just let me know, and I will let you know when I'm going on a trip. And I actually do have some spots available for my February trip, and we will talk about that later. But as far as the trip itself, you have to get a visa to go to Brazil. It's the only South American country that requires a visa these days. And it's a little bit of a hassle. You have to go on the Internet, and what I advise people to do is to use one of the visa companies. There's some companies throughout the country that will actually go to the Brazilian embassy here in the States and get your visa for you. Otherwise, it's just very, very complicated to get done. And there's a fee for that. I think it costs about I think my whole visa deal cost me about $160, and I have a five-year visa. So I just keep going every year because I have that visa. And then there's definitely some concerns as far as, you know, getting some shots and stuff. You're actually not required, that I know of, to have any shots or inoculations, but I have the yellow fever. I think that's just a good one anytime you go to the jungles of the world. And I have the typhoid, and I probably have other things I don't even know I have, but those are a few that I'm sure. And then malaria is a huge concern for people, yet it's actually pretty rare in the Amazon. The water has a lot of tannin in it. It's basically from the decaying leaves and the larvae of mosquitoes and a lot of your aquatic insects don't do well in that kind of water. I see a lot of mosquitoes when I'm in Manaus, and that's the big city we have to hang out in for usually 24 hours before we go to the jungle. And I don't take the malaria pills. I'm not saying people shouldn't. I just don't, and I just cover up and use bug dope when I'm in Manaus, and then when I'm in the jungle, rare to see them. So pretty comfortable in that environment. Not worried about it.
Really rare to see the mosquitoes in the jungle. I would think they'd be eating you alive out there, but probably there's other critters that are feeding on you as well.
Oh yeah, possible, possible.
Yeah,
I said you really don't see them though. It's amazing.
Yeah,
you know, you don't see the big creepy spiders that you know are there. You can. I mean, once in a while you might get lucky and see one, but realistically, it's. You know, you're fishing and you're on the water, and the only things you see are a lot of caimans and a lot of fish.
Mm-hmm. What? Okay, so you fly into Manaus in a big city, and then what happens then?
We have a really nice hotel that we stay at in Manaus. So you land at the airport, taxi driver picks you up. It's all organized in the trip, takes you to the hotel. You overnight. That Friday night, usually arrive on a Friday, so you overnight Friday night, have a nice breakfast, and then anytime between like 10 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon, you will get on a amphibian, you know, a small plane that can land on water or land, and you will fly about an hour and a half into the Amazon region. And you're not fishing the Amazon River. That's just too big, and it's always muddy. So you're basically fishing tributaries of tributaries of tributaries. And so an hour and a half flight out of Manaus, we usually go north because I do my trip in December and I do it in February or March. So we go north for about an hour and a half, and they drop us down in the lagoon, and the guides are waiting, and they take us right to camp. It's really a spectacular trip.
So you said an hour and a half flight on a small plane north.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. I just got a question on the Internet, and it was T.D. Warren in São Paulo, Brazil.
Oh,
and
cool.
He wanted to know, well, what part of Brazil you fish in? I think you just answered that just in time for him. So hope that does it for you, T.D. I guess that's your initials there. So that's not too far away from the big city, and you're already in the jungle. Then what do you have when you land there in the lagoon, you said? And what kind of facilities do you have there?
We actually have a floating tent camp, and the outfit I use is called River Plate Outfitters, and they're famous for having these floating camps. And the nice thing about it, if you think about it, if you go to a lodge, you're basically fishing the same water that the group fished the week before and the week before that. You know, basically they can't rotate their water that well. These guys, Riverplant, actually has these floating camps, so they will fish a piece of water for 2 or 3 days, and then they will move it. So, for instance, when we get there, I'll actually getting to Brazil a month from today, and we'll fly in. The camp will probably be where they left off the week before, you know, where the best fishing they found was. We'll fish it just for like 2 days, and then we'll come back, and all of a sudden we'll notice when we come back in the evening that our camp has moved, you know, maybe 5 or 6 miles or something. And we'll be on fresh water for the next day. So it's really great. You don't have any super long boat rides or anything. And when I say tent camp, it's not like pitching a tent. These are real hard tents. They're really nice. Even at air condition, you have your own bathroom, your own shower. They're fabulous.
Oh, wow. Yeah, sounds nice. Yeah. So and then they take care of all the cooking for you, I suppose, and all that.
That's right. You have all your meals made for you. They'll send you out with a packed lunch. You could come in if you wanted to, but most people want to go out and fish all day. And the meals are very good. And it's a good long day of fishing, too. You know, we're up at 5:30, 6 o'clock eating breakfast. And the minute it's light, you're on your way with your guide. And they'll keep you out there all day. I'll tell you what, it gets dark about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and you don't get in a minute before 6 o'clock.
Mm.
And you are really efficient. It's a good 11-hour day.
Get your money's worth, huh? Yeah, sounds like
you
it.
You get your money first.
Yeah, yeah. Well, from the same, I'll call him TD, and São Paulo, he says, I understand that peacock bass will fight all other fish and take over a lake. He wants to know if they're concerned about that in Florida. I don't know that you know anything about that. But does that resemble the character of the fish to you?
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting story. I did do some research on the peacocks of Florida a number of years ago. Actually, when I was writing my book, I had a little segment in there about peacocks. And they do have a tendency to eat almost everything they can get their little mouths on. But somehow in Florida, it worked because there's so many other really bad invasive fish that they put the peacocks in there anyway to eat some of those bad guys. And it's one of those few situations where a man messed with nature and it actually worked out pretty good down there.
Yeah, yeah. The what tips can you give a person on gear to take down there? And I'm not talking about fishing gear yet, but I'm talking about other clothing, other things that you wish you had when you got down there that you didn't bring.
Sure. You know, actually, a lot of it is people have a tendency to bring too much. In that small plane flight, we're only allowed to bring about, 45 pounds or something like that. I think you can carry a little on the plane and then, have maybe 30 pounds in your bag. People tend to bring too many clothes, for one, because you're almost, you put on a fresh pair of clothes and like an hour later, because of the humidity, it feels like they're dirty anyway. So I tell people this, bring, 2 pairs of long pants, 2 pairs of shorts, and 2 long-sleeve shirts, and you're probably set for the week. And I'll give you a great tip that I do everywhere I go in the world is my flight clothes. I seal in a great big Ziploc plastic bag. As soon as I get to my destination, I put it right in that bag so they don't get all dirty and hot and humid while I'm on the trip. And then just before I get in that plane to fly back to States, I break out my flight clothes again. So, you know, really don't bring too many clothes. And then I always bring my bug dope, sunscreen, you know, the basics you bring anywhere in the world, and a good supply of fishing stuff. And like you say, we'll talk a little more about that at the end, but that's where I invest my my weight, all in rods and reels.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, we've got a couple of questions about, you know, get to the bottom line on this thing, and then we'll take a quick break. But or no, let's wait for this question until after we take the break, and then we'll you may address this in after the break anyway. So let's take a 30 seconds here, and we'll be right back. Harper Creek Fly Fishing Company is North Carolina's premier backcountry fly fishing guide service, located in Lennar, North Carolina, at the base of the Blue Ridge Mountains. They fish some of the most beautiful limestone spring creeks North Carolina has to offer. Plus, their guide has over 15 years of professional experience, and in addition to backcountry guide service for experienced anglers, they offer intensive full-day instructional trips for the novice angler. So go there and spend a day with them in fly fishing paradise. For more information on their services, just visit them at their website at www.nc-flyfishing.com. That's NC for North Carolina, flyfishing.com. Or you can call them at 828-758-2446. That's 828-758-2446. If you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, we're talking with Jeff Currier about peacock bass and other Brazilian treasures. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So, Jeff, what's going on in your fly fishing world? And I'm sure you'd like to tell us about the upcoming trips you have going on. And fill us in.
Yeah, well, you know, I just finished up a busy month. Did some traveling in October. Did a, you know, spoke at a bunch of clubs and did a lot of fishing. Got to beat up on some grass carp. And last weekend I was in Wisconsin catching some nice muskie. And November is stay home and work month, so I'm doing a lot of art. I've been working on art since about 5:30 this morning, just working away on a big cutthroat project. And I'll do a little fishing on the South Fork about every 3 days this month because it's so close to home. But I've got a big speaking tour this winter. I'm working for the fly fishing shows, so hopefully I'll see people out there throughout the winter. If you go to my website, I have my schedule up there, and definitely catch me at those shows. And I'm hosting a couple of trips, two to Brazil. I've got one in December, so I'll be leaving, like I said, exactly a month from now. And that trip is full, but I still have three spots left for my February trip, which is February 11th through 18th. And I'll tell you what, I'm sure everybody's listening because they want to catch peacock bass. You can contact me first thing tomorrow. Just go to my blog, which actually just go to my website, which is jeffcurrier.com, and you can click on my blog link on the website. And if you see the blog I posted today, which I put a whole bunch of fish from the Amazon, really cool pictures, just go to the bottom. It says Brazil 2012. It'll tell you about the trip, and it gives you my email, so you can email me and contact me right away.
Great. So, great. So that yeah. begs the question. We've got it from Phil in Utah, and then Randy in Tennessee is. And Randy says, "How much would a trip like this cost if a blue collar guy like myself could afford it?" So, well, what does it cost?
It's not cheap. The trip is $4,395, and although it sounds expensive to a lot of us, that's actually a very good price. The price of the Amazon trips is a little less than it was probably 5 years ago, and I'm sure that's all because of the economy. So then you're looking at a little bit in tips. I always tell people, if you budget $6,000, you'll have some change left when it's all said and done, and you will come home with one of the greatest trips you've probably ever been on in your life.
Now, is that with airfare or with plus airfare?
Yeah. $6,000 would be with an estimated airfare. So the trip itself is that $4,095. Airfares, you know, depends where you live. It's about $1,500 from Idaho for a flight. So right in that $6,000 department.
Okay, for the whole thing. Well, that's not bad at all. I mean, you pay that to go to Alaska, so.
Absolutely.
That's in the scheme of things, not terribly expensive. So, okay. Good.
I always
well,
tell people.
Go ahead.
I always tell people I love Jackson Hole. So if I'm gone on a trip like that, I save like a grand because I live in Jackson Hole. Actually, I'm kidding, but it's almost that way.
Yeah, that's the price you pay to be in a resort area, huh? Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's talk about the peacock itself, and maybe you can fill us in. And I know you look at fish very carefully because you paint them all, and I mean, you know every scale and every fin and everything that about the fish you paint. But so, where did it get its name? Why is it called peacock bass?
Because of its colors. It's just one of the most incredibly colored fish you'll ever see. It has, you know, probably 8 different vibrant colors on them. And, again, I posted those pictures today so you can check them out on my blog. But they're stunning. That's the best way to put it. They are stunning.
And you said there are different varieties, right? Well, first of all, is it known as by any other names?
There's probably 10 or 15 different species of peacock bass. I don't even think they really know. And, you know, you can get into Latin names and get real specific. One has one more spot than the other or what have you. But there's really 4 that are talked about by anglers. And there's the big boy, which is called the Tamensis or the Azul. It depends where you're at. Or if you're in Brazil, we call them the Tucanari. If you're in, you know, a Spanish-speaking country, which, by the way, Brazil is Portuguese. But if you're in a Spanish-speaking country, they usually call them pavon. Or, you know, Americans usually just say it's the peacock bass because it is the king. And that one actually gets, you know, possibly gets up to 30 pounds. I know the world record is about 28 pounds. And then there's 3 smaller ones that I've caught. There's the butterfly, which is probably the most numerous everywhere I've been for peacock bass. And he probably doesn't get bigger than about 5 or 6 pounds, and you get lots of 3 and 4 pounders on a trip. They really are what makes the trip fun because you can catch fish all the time and when those guys are around. Then they have that gray bar that I mentioned is the one that's in Panama and probably the one in Florida. And he goes by gray bar or fire belly. And there's one called the Royal, which is I've only seen them in Venezuela, and they're a real small guy, but they're the prettiest of all the peacocks, I'd have to say.
So quite a few different varieties, yeah. And when you're in Brazil, you're targeting the big boys? Is that your ultimate goal, is hook into one of those?
Yes.
Yeah,
what Brazil's famous for is big ones. You know, you'll catch all those species, but it's your best opportunity to catch a peacock bass over 10 pounds. Several years ago, I hosted a trip down there, and I had 3 of my guys got 18 pounders.
And
that's monster.
Yeah, how big do they, I mean, what would be a trophy?
A trophy is a fish, I'd say, you know, realistically, a trophy is a fish over 10 pounds. But on these trips to Brazil, I think everybody really hopes to get one over 12 pounds. And it's pretty typical that we do. I think on, you know, my most recent trip, everybody got one that was about 14 or better. And so there's a lot of big ones there, really. As in the last year, River Plate Anglers broke the world record. A guy got a 28-pounder.
Mm. That's great.
Pretty
That's
good.
That's great. Yeah. That's incredible. Now, do you know how long they live or their lifespan or?
I don't know. I actually tried to find that out on the internet one time, and I'm just going to say because of their voracious appetite, they probably get big in a short time. I'm going to guess, you know, a 5-year-old's probably over 10 pounds, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. And what is their I heard at one point, I don't know if it's true or not, but are these actually a cichlid, or are, when we say peacock bass, are they any part of the bass family that we know, or are they a different kind of fish totally?
They are not a bass at all. They are cichlids. And
okay.
For those of you who don't know what cichlids are, it's just a massive family of fish found throughout the warm waters of the world.
And often found in your aquariums at home, huh?
Right.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
And you're going down in December and February, so I take it that's prime time of the year to go Mexico for peacocks in South America?
It is. You know, they actually have some fisheries that are in the southern part of the Amazon that they fish in July and August and September. That obviously doesn't interest most Americans because we want to be here to enjoy our summer. So the best time for peacock bass fishing is November through March. And, you know, with December, January, February being really good times.
And, let's see, we just got a question on the Internet. Grab a couple of these here. Cheryl in Pleasant Hill asked, Jeff, what's the best way to pack your fly gear? I'm going down next year and plan on taking a spinning reel as a backup, and it only breaks down into two pieces. Do you take backup lines?
I do take backup lines, and because it is possible to have a fish pull you so far back into the cover that entangle you up, it's possible you could break a fly line. But I'd suggest for your average angler, just one extra fly line, you know, floating fly line is fine. People on my group trips, they really don't have to worry about it because I'm such a junkie. I'll have extra rods and reels and lines. So if anybody has a catastrophe, I got them covered. That's the other thing nice when you're on a group too. You know, if you ever had a snafu with the airlines or something, you know, you got a group of seven guys or eight guys on a trip, someone's going to have some extra stuff for the poor guy that didn't get his stuff all the way down to Brazil.
Yeah, yeah. Here's an interesting comment by Rodrigo. He's from Brazil too. We got a lot of Brazilians listening in tonight. They're checking you out here,
cool.
Jeff. Yeah,
cool.
He says his name is because of the eyes on his tail that reminds the peacock feather who has an eye. So,
good point.
That's where he's saying the name came from, like a peacock eye on a peacock feather. So we should all know about that as fly tires. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, cool. Thanks for contributing that. What about, you know, I don't know, that time of year, I guess that's summertime there, it's not the rainy season, you have to worry about flooding, or does the weather affect your fishing down there? You go to Alaska and you never know what you're going to get because, you know, storms can be, it could rain all week or whatever. And you go down the Keys and get blown out for 3 days. What kind of issues might you have down there, if any?
Flooding is a huge concern. Even though it's the right time of year, it's still rainforest. So, you know, it's not their wet season, but you could still get just a rainstorm that's unbelievable. And funny you bring that up. Last year, almost all trips in February and March were rescheduled because of rain. And I, unfortunately, I was one of those groups. So I had to call all my folks in my group within 48 hours of the trip. I mean, everybody was all psyched to go, including myself, and we had to cancel it. And, you know, it's not fun having to do something like that. But that's why we're going in December. I have the group that I was taking in March, we're all going together in December. So it can happen anytime.
And that was for flooding, right?
That was for
flooding.
That
was flooding. Yeah.
Yep. We could have gone. I mean, but one nice thing, I tell you, River Plate is very good in that they say, hey, you know what, we don't think your fishing's going to be good. We'd love to take your money, but we don't want to do that. We'd rather have you guys come at the right time. So we're really able to just leave our money there and go at different times. That's what we're going to do. But I'm always nervous about it. You know, it can happen. It's the rainforest.
Yeah. And, well, it's the earth. You never know what's going to happen around. Yeah. Nope. Well, let's talk about a little bit about equipment. What do you take, you know, what weight rod do you take down? I know Doug in Calgary was asking you know, what weight rods do you use in the Amazon, and what kind of fly lines do you use? And what proportion of fishing can be done with floating versus sinking lines?
Well, let's focus on, you know, peacock bass to start.
Right.
It obviously depends on whether you're going to Miami or Panama. Those are smaller fish, so you probably get by with a light rod. But when you're going to the true native fish of Brazil or Venezuela, I would not do it with anything less than an 8-weight. And typically that's what most of my folks that go with me will bring, because that's about as big a rod as they can throw all day long. But the truth of the matter, the best rod size, in my opinion, is really a 9 or even a 10, because when you hook one of those 14-pounders, or, you know, who knows, what if you got that 20-pounder, for 15 seconds to a minute, it's absolutely almost terrifying. I mean, they are so strong, it's almost impossible to hold them. And what you end up doing, a lot of people have trouble doing this, but you don't let them take any line at first, because they'll go right into the woodwork, and you just bend, you put a bend in your rod. Do not let the rod fall forward and point at the fish, because you will get broke off every time. So use the bend of your rod, and sometimes 8 weights can't handle the pressure of that fish swimming, and your rod can shatter pretty easily. But 9s and 10s, especially 10s, seems to make all the difference in the world, and you can actually, as long as you can physically hold your rod at an angle so the rod is bent and not pointed towards the fish for, 15 seconds to 30 seconds, that fish will then usually turn and fight you in the middle of the river, in the middle of the lagoon. Reels, I bring my typical saltwater reels that match those rods. Realistically, I don't very often see my backing when I'm fishing peacock bass, and a lot of that is they're either going to run into their structure, which is, probably 30 feet away from where you hook them at the most, or they're going to go in the middle of a lagoon or a river, which is, usually not that big of a river. So I think my last trip I saw my backing one time. So you got to have it, but it's not critical that you have a reel full like you would for saltwater fly fishing. And then fly line wise, I'd say it's about 90% floating fly line, but I always have my folks bring, an intermediate line and a sinking line. Probably won't use the sinking. The intermediate can be pretty handy if you want to do a little dredging in some of the deep holes in a lagoon or in the river hole. And the lines I like, I should mention in the beginning, it looks like a little bit of my bio is old, because I'm doing some scientific angler stuff now rather than Rio. And I like their tarpon lines and their bonefish lines for fishing for peacock bass, because they can. What's critical is you have to have a line that can handle the heat, and those fly lines can handle the heat. And this trip, I'm actually going to take a new line they've come out with, the Titan Taper. It's kind of designed for throwing great big flies for muskie and pike, but supposedly it can handle the heat too, so I'm going to give it a whirl. And I'm also going to try the redfish lines, because the heads on redfish lines are really good at throwing big, crazy flies, and that's what you need to do on this trip.
Big flies, huh? Yeah.
Yep.
What about your terminal tackle on this? How do you set that up?
Well,
bite tippet or anything like that? Or?
You do need some bite tippet on there. You don't need wire for peacock bass. They don't have teeth that are voracious like a piranha or a tiger fish, but they're very abrasive. It's kind of like almost like somewhat sharp molars all the way around their mouth. However, you don't need wire. Wire sometimes, gets kinked up after you catch a few fish, and you catch so many peacocks on a good trip that, you'd be changing it all the time. So I use 40 to 60 pound monofilament shock tippet, and it works great. The truth of the matter is I do the 40 pound, and it works just fine.
Okay. What about for some of these other fish you fish for? Are you using the same thing? Or do you need with like arowanas or piranha or those kind of things?
Well, piranha, you definitely have to have wire. And let's go back to the rods a little bit. I do bring my, I bring a couple 9s and a couple 10s in case I break a rod. But I also bring my 6-weight, and I use my 6-weight for messing around with piranhas. And it's fun. Sometimes you'll get in an area where the piranhas start wrecking your peacock flies, and you have to up and move. But I think before I up and move, I have to punish a few piranhas. So I grab my 6-weight, and I usually have just a floating line on it, and an old trout fly, like an old streamer with a little bit of flash on it, something that I would normally throw away, but I save them for my piranhas in the Amazon. And I'll throw that out there and strip it as fast as I can. You catch piranhas like crazy. And then I'll take that same 6-weight, too, and I'll use it for fishing for arowana, which is a fish that, oh, man, he's amazing. He's kind of eel-like. He has tarpon scales and almost a jaw like a tarpon. And they specialize in eating critters that are just over the water, hanging off branches and stuff. So, like, they love eating spiders. I'm sure they could rip a bat out of a tree if they wanted to, or whatever, or a bird without any problem. So I bring down some great big old, you know, those gaudy-looking foam flies used to work around here that don't work very good anymore and catch arowanas all day. They're really fun.
Yeah, that's another fish you find in an aquarium.
That's right.
Yeah, cool fish. Well, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dig into more of the flies and equipment and so forth that you want to bring down there with you. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as a seasonal snook or tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters today and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com, flatstime.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jeff Curry about peacock brass and the other Brazilian treasures. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. A couple questions did come in on the Internet, so let me grab a couple of these, Jeff, before we jump back to where we were. Eric in Boise wants to know, do you fish for peacock bass the same way you would largemouth and smallmouth bass? And we really haven't
yeah.
done the presentation yet, but
yeah, you pretty much do. You're throwing your fly out there and you're stripping it towards you, whether it's a popper or a streamer. The difference is when a peacock strikes, they truly are the strongest fish I've ever met for the first 15 seconds. So, you know, you hook a nice bass, he's going to make a little run on you, or he might even, when you make your next strip with him on there, he's going to come towards you a little bit. But peacocks, they just immediately turn and go for it. So you really got to throw that rod into the side, you know, in the side position to get the bend of the rod immediately. But, you know, other than that, tactic-wise, it's pretty standard, throwing your fly as close to the structure as you can and rein it back.
And we did get a question in while we were talking about piranhas. Rodrigo in Brazil wanted to know, he says, hey, Jeff, it would be a pleasure to fish by your side when you come down here again. I would like to know what kind of flies you use for piranhas. So, as you said, old trout flies, streamers with some flash, right?
Yeah, one of the ones that I seem to do really good with is zonkers, because, you know, they have those kind of flashy bodies on them. And there's no doubt the piranhas like that flash. But remember, one piranha, your fly is usually toast, so that's why I always tell me to start throughout the entire summer to be kind of saving your old trout flies and so you can get out with a box that doesn't break your heart when you lose a fly real fast.
Yeah. One fish, one fly, one fish kind of thing, huh? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. George in Alabama wanted to know, what do you use for a knot when you connect wire leaders to mono or braided line?
Well, most of the wires now you can do regular knots with, you know, whether you're using Tiger wire or the Rio wire, and they're both very good. In fact, that Rio wire, I've not had piranhas bite through. And so I just do what I usually do, attach and tip it together, and that is I do a triple surgeons. You know, you probably could get by with a double, but I'm a man of the triple, and I take no chances. And what's best about those wires I just mentioned, too, is, you know, after you tie it to your mono, you can just do a normal knot to your fly, whatever you like to use.
Okay, good. So let's talk about flies. And first, you know, let's talk about peacock here. You did talk about some of the other fish already. What do they eat down there normally, and what kind of patterns are you trying to create to simulate that natural food?
Well, I'd say that they probably eat fish as much as anything, but I'm sure if there was a small snake or a bird flopping on the surface, he'd be toast pretty quick. The flies we typically use for peacock bass, number one, have to be on good hooks. So I tell everybody saltwater flies is the way to go because they will bend your hook when you're putting that massive amount of pressure on them in that first 30-second run. So most saltwater hooks are strong enough to land a tarpon. They'll be strong enough to land a peacock bass. Bright colors are a pretty good way to go. But it's like any fish. If I had a really overcast day, I might throw some darker stuff. But usually those peacocks are out just foraging like crazy when the sun's bright. So yellows and oranges are excellent. Specific patterns, I'd have to say deceivers, big-eye baitfish is one of my favorites, and I do like the eyes on a fly, and that's why I like that one. The Enrico Puglisi flies, he's got a fly called the Big Eyes, which is a great pattern for peacock bass. And Whistlers is another good one. Realistically, people kind of go a little overboard as far as they overthink a peacock trip. I'm not much of a tier, but I can tie peacock bass flies because you're basically just putting some bright colors on a hook, a good quality hook, and catching fish with it. And poppers, you know, peacocks will come up and slam a popper. A lot of times the guides don't have as much faith in the popper, and you have to show them that it works. But, boy, I'll tell you what, peacocks love a popper, and it's not just small ones by any means. I've caught peacocks over 10 pounds on poppers many times.
Mm-hmm. Do you, you know, when you're using poppers, you know, you mentioned the arowana, and, you know, do you get surprised as to what you hook up with sometimes? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When you're streamer fishing, you get surprised all the time. You catch, you know, I know we're going to talk about these fish, but there's probably four or five different species of fish you can catch on the streamer, and you'll be surprised because, for instance, the jacundas are not a big fish. You know, they might be a foot to 16 inches long, but they will suck down a peacock fly, which I didn't mention the size of peacock flies. Usually you're fishing 2-aught to 4-aught flies, and if you can handle a 5 or a 6-aught, you have a good chance at a big fish. But, yeah, these small fish will come up and eat those big flies. And then as far as the poppers, yeah, last trip I had an arowana take a giant peacock popper off the surface. So that did surprise me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the questions was if you are using really big flies, and like you just said, the bigger the better for a trophy-type fish, What are some tips you can give for, you know, effective casting of those big flies?
Well, I think double hauling is a very important thing to know how to do because that just, you know, accelerates the line speed going through the air. And the faster your line's moving through the air, the better chance it's going to carry a heavier fly. At the same time, you know, you might be doing some sidearm casts to get a fly under, you know, an overhanging tree or something. And then you might want to open up your loop a little bit. But I'd say the number one thing is practice your double haul before you go. Also, you know, most people coming from the Rocky Mountains don't pick up a 10-weight very often. So I tell my people to take that bigger rod, even, you know, whether it's an 8, 9, or a 10, and go in the yard, go to the park, and practice with it before the trip. You've got to. That does a couple things for you. Not only do you get good at your rod, but you'll also be getting those muscles ready to throw that big rod all day long for a week long.
Yeah, yeah. Are you actually, what do you actually fish, 5 days? 5 long?
You know, we guarantee 5.5 days, but I've had 6 days before. It depends when that plane comes to get you on Saturday morning. So you basically fish Sunday through Friday for sure. You know, actually, I think we got 6.5 one day, one trip.
Hmm. Now, Got to be strong. What about wind? Is wind an issue casting down there?
Very rarely. I can't think of any time where I said, wow, it's windy. But I'm sure you could get caught in a thunderstorm or something. Of course, then you're probably not going to be fishing at that time anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Do they have lightning-type storms there, or?
They do.
Okay. So there are times you might have to get off the water or something.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So you already told us what size flies. Do you use any weed guards on the flies? Is that an issue or
You know, I don't have weed guards on mine. I probably brought a couple flies down there. Just happen to have a weed guard on because I like the look of the fly. And that's definitely handy when you accidentally throw your fly into where the monkeys live. But when it's in the water, you usually don't have to worry about it because you're – I always tell my people a real good trick is don't throw your fly too close to the structure, because if you land it an inch from the structure, like say you would when you're trout fishing, because you know that's where the fish are, and that fish grabs it, you have almost no chance of keeping him from getting into the structure and breaking you off. So I try to land my fly like 5 feet shy of it and then strip it out.
That makes it easier. Keep you from getting hung up, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Steve Winters in Reedsburg, Wisconsin asks about what are your favorite size for surface flies and favorite colors. I mean, you said 2 to 4 aught. Are you talking that for poppers and stuff too? Or?
Yeah, it's hard to get a popper hook, you know, in a 4 aught. You can use a regular hook and put a popper on it, but sometimes it messes up the floatability. But I've seen some good popper hooks out there that are like 2 aught, but I'll put the biggest head, you know, biggest foam head on it that I can get my hands on. If you can handle it. I mean, a lot of guys, to be honest with you, probably shouldn't be throwing a giant popper like that. So I usually tell my folks to slim them down a little, get some pencil poppers, stuff that's easier to cast. But myself, I throw some pretty gargantuous looking crazy stuff.
The reading one of these questions here. I know you didn't mention this before, but I just want to make sure we covered this. Peter in Costa Rica says he's about to head south to the Amazon again, this time to the Guiana waters, and was finishing up my streamer flies and wondering what your choice would be for choice of color, both white and dark, for white and dark waters, in addition to use synthetic fibers or natural hair and feathers for these flies.
Well, as far as the I'm assuming he means like fishing over sand or fishing the dark water, you know, some of the dark tan water. I use the same flies. You know, if it's a bright, sunny day, I don't care what the water really looks like. I'm probably going to be fishing a bright fly. And if it's overcast, I might darken up my flies. As far as materials, though, I really like the synthetics. One of the problems I have with, you know, say a normal deceiver, which is tied out of bucktail or what have you, when the piranhas get a hold of that, they bite that hair right in half, whereas a lot of the synthetics will hold up a little longer. Those Enrico Puglisi flies will hold up a long time. They get very tangled, so I actually bring like a comb with me, and you know, maybe halfway through the day I'll comb my fly back into good shape. But they hold together best with synthetics.
Okay. The and let's see here. Okay, let's move on to presentation. And before we do that, I got a question in on the internet. Eric and Boise want to know, does the rain make the peacock bass more active? Have you noticed?
Well, it does, because it funnels food into the river or the lake, you know, depending on where you're fishing. So they do get pretty active. One of the problems, though, you know, we kind of talked about the flooding. When you get too much rain, those fish, they can go further back into the jungle and literally where you can't get to them.
Right.
So I always get concerned if I hit rain like the first day and it's relentless for 3 days, because, you know, a lot of your big fish are sneaking out of range.
Yeah. They get – the water goes actually and becomes – covers the forest floor and you just can't even get in there with a boat or the cast, right?
That's right. But I should add something there, too. When you have floods, for instance, the Llanos, which is the huge area down in Venezuela, that completely floods and then it completely dries. And those peacocks in Venezuela are known for, even though they don't get as maybe big as the ones in Brazil, but their fighting quality is absolutely insane because they're dealing with these currents a lot of the year. This year in Brazil, because last year almost all trips got rained out, those fish – where they should be extra big from all the new nutrients that went into the system, and probably were fighting a lot of current as well. So it just could be an unbelievable year. I'm really excited about it.
Mm-hmm. And since you mentioned Venezuela, there was a question came in on the internet from Mark Hutchings in Provo. He says he was in Venezuela a couple of years ago, many years ago, in fact. But how dangerous is it to travel to and fish there right now, and how far off the coast do you have to go in the Orinoco River to find the peacocks? And are there outfitters in that area, or are you on your own?
Well, I think there is an outfitter now. I'm not sure the name of it, but I Googled up Venezuela, you know, peacock bass fishing, not recently, but probably 6 months ago, and there was a camp on the upper Orinoco that looked pretty cool. Actually, would really like to go to it. The camp that I was at was on a tributary of the Orinoco. It's called the Sinaruku River, and I don't know if that place is still in business. I haven't heard anything about it, so you know, you might be a little bit on your own in some areas. But as far as being worried,
yeah,
I did go to a camp, but we actually we were trout bums with no money, and we met these guys in Caracas, and they said they had this camp, and we told them we couldn't afford it, and they asked us to run supplies down to the camp for them. So we actually drove a car from Caracas to the border of Colombia. It took us like 4 days, and it sounds frightening, but it was fine. People were really nice to us, and we had no trouble. So, you know, Venezuela is definitely one of those places where the last few years there's a little hostility, you know, between U.S. and Venezuela. But I think as far as American, the normal people and the normal people of Venezuela, I think everybody gets along pretty good. I always just feel like humans, when you're nice, people will be nice back to you. So I don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, getting back to the peacocks here again. Talking about presentation, are the peacocks always aggressive, or do they get shy or fickle at times, or are they just always on the munch?
They seem to always be on the munch. I guess I've maybe had a couple midday times where it was super hot and we weren't catching as many fish, but to be honest with you, it might have been the angler as much as anything, because, you know, when it's 95 degrees and humid, you get a little hot and you probably aren't performing with your fly rod as good as you should be. So I think they're pretty aggressive all the time. Now, I did have one mediocre at best trip to Brazil, and that was because we had a lot of high water. And I, you know, you could say that the fish weren't aggressive, but I really don't think we were getting our flies in front of the fish because of the high water. So I think they're always pretty darn aggressive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we need to take a quick break again here, but when we come back, we'll talk more about presentation and actually doing the fishing forum here, and fighting and releasing and so forth. So stick with us. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. And there you can view their fishing products and guide services that they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jeff Currier about peacock bass and other Brazilian treasures. If you'd like to ask Jeff a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, presentation questions. Are you always fishing from a boat, or do you ever get to wade, or is it even safe to wade?
Well, it's probably not safe to wade, but, yeah, I've waded a few times. I was down there on a real low water year a couple of years ago in March, and we could get out on the beaches and some of the sandy bottom areas and walk around and cast the peacocks. It was a real treat. Again, probably not the smartest thing to do, but it was cool. And the reason I say not the smartest. Yeah, that's never stopped me before. But you got to worry more than the crocodiles. You know, people worry about the caimans, and that's definitely something to worry about. And you don't want to get eaten by one of those guys. But there are freshwater rays, freshwater stingrays, that you could step on that are really bad news. They could really mess up your trip fast.
Mm-hmm. Question just came in from Eric in Boise again. He says, is a barb hook necessary for catching peacock, or do you go barbless down there?
I recommend everybody go barbless, and one of the reasons for that is because we are so far out in the wilderness, we just don't want anybody to stick a fly in them real bad. You know, if it's barbless, you can always get out.
Yeah.
They stay on. They hook.
Yeah, easier on the fish and easier on you, right? Always.
Yep.
Are the peacocks more active at certain times of the day, like morning or evening, or?
I definitely seem to do really good in the morning and the evenings. Morning, you know, that's probably when I'm fishing my best. It's, you know, I'm just right out of bed and I'm all fired up. So that could be a big part of it. And then the evening, of course, are a little less sun on you, so you're probably fishing better. But I think like any fish, they definitely wake up hungry.
They do, yeah. And what about the depth that they hold at? As the heat gets hotter, do they go deeper?
What happens is they will go further back into their trees where they're hiding out, you know, when the sun gets
shade.
Real strong. Yeah, they go a little further into the shade. And then as far as the deeper holes, I'd have to say that, you know, I have noticed my guides take us to some of the deep water during midday, so they probably do hunker down a little bit to get out of that sun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about any night fishing? Is that productive or even necessary?
Well, the only night fishing I've ever done, and this is when you are playing with danger, when you're out there in the dark in the Amazon, it's probably not the smartest thing to be doing, but I had the treat of going catfishing once when I was in Venezuela. And we were in the same places, same areas where we caught peacock bass all day long. And believe it or not, fishing even with bait for these giant catfish, we did not see one peacock all night long. So I think that maybe they're just like, you know what, I don't want to get eaten, so I'm going deep into my woods and wait until daylight again. So, and I would like to know if somebody ever, you know, if some of these folks from Brazil have done some night fishing for them, if it's successful or not. That'd be cool to hear.
Yeah. When you say get eaten, what's going to eat them, the crocodiles?
That's probably their biggest fear, you know, their biggest predator.
Yeah, the crocs, yeah. Because we'll talk more about other, well, let's just leave that for now. We'll talk more about other fish. So where do you find them? You had mentioned structure before. Is there much of a current out there? Are they pretty much free swimming?
Yeah, they usually hold the river edges in the wood piles, you know, where there's trees and big bushes down in the water. But in low water years, sometimes that stuff will be out of the water, so they will move to the holes. And if you have a good guide that's familiar with the area, which, you know, the river plate guides are great, they'll all of a sudden you'll be casting the bushes and they'll say, hey, cast one off to the right there. There's a hole there, and they know exactly where it is. Sure enough, you throw your fly out there and you catch a fish out of the middle of the river or the middle of the lagoon. So they do like a little depth and they do like the shade. Now, as far as current, you know, the rivers that I've fished have not had a whole lot of current. Payara fishing, you're fishing a lot of current, and I've never caught a peacock out of the heavy current there. So not to say they're not there, but they must not like it that much.
Yeah. And what about presentation methods that you use? Kind of run us through your day of different scenarios and how you work the water.
Well, when I'm fishing, you know, one of those big streamers, I will not worry about slapping it down. If anything, I'll almost do a little haul at the end there just to make my fly hit the water kind of hard. And I'll do two quick strips right away just to make sure I get all the, you know, the coils out of my line if it wasn't a perfectly beautiful straight cast. And then I'll let it sink a little, and then I'll start a normal, you know, big, long strips. And you cannot move your fly too fast. It's like saltwater fish. If they want it, they will catch it. So, you know, you can strip it in pretty quickly. Now, with my poppers, it's almost like I'm bass fishing. You know, I'll throw my popper out, get tight, make one pop, and then I'll let it sit there, you know. Not for a minute or anything, but I'll let it sit there a good 10, 15 seconds and then pop it again. Almost always tell people you pop it and then just about let the the ripples go away before your next pop.
Okay. Okay. So pretty much those two presentation methods all day long, huh? Nothing.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. Now that makes it, well, easy in one sense and hard in the other because you're throwing big stuff all day, right?
Yeah, that's the only hard part about it. But, yeah, you don't – these fish aren't like fishing a Henry's Fork rainbow. They're not really
right.
Tough to catch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned their strength and their kind of fierceness when you hook up. But can you compare them to saltwater fish? I mean, are they as strong or comparable?
Yeah, as far as a saltwater fish, if anybody's ever caught a snapper or a grouper, you know – if you hook a snapper near, you know, some mangroves, he literally bolts back into those mangroves so fast and breaks you off. You're just standing there kind of shocked. Or let's say you were fishing deep for grouper and you dropped a great big jig down the bottom and you start jigging, all of a sudden you got a fish. And then he just pulled you right back into the bottom and broke you off so fast. That's basically what peacocks do. They come out, they grab your fly, and they go back home almost no matter what. I've had times where I did get the bend of the rod and held my line so we couldn't take any line, and the entire boat got pulled into the bushes. It's just incredible. I mean, sometimes the guides, once they know that if it's somebody that's never done this before, when you hook your first one, you look back and he's kind of cracking up because he knows you're just going to be scared to death. You can't even believe it happened to you. But then after, 15, 30 seconds, they kind of say, hey, I'm going to fight you in the middle of the river. And it's still a strong, fierce fight, but you have a pretty good chance of getting them in at that point. And some peacocks jump. In fact, most of them will get a little airborne on you. Very exciting. Usually just two or three jumps in a fight. But even the big 18-pounder, I was on board for one of those 18-pounders on that last trip. And that fish probably jumped four times. It was really just incredible.
So what is the biggest challenge in fighting a peacock bass and getting him to the boat?
Surviving the first 30 seconds. You know, so many people that don't have experience fighting big fish, the line slides under their trigger finger, and then next thing you know, the fish is back in the bushes, and you pretty much have to go in there and start digging them out, and you're probably not going to get them. Or people, they hold on to that line tight like they're supposed to, but the fish pulls so hard that all of a sudden they drop their rod tip, and next thing you know, they're pointed at the fish, and then, boom, snap them off.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like, as you said before, they don't make particularly long runs, just to the nearest cover, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's one exception. So it can happen, but not very often.
Yeah, yeah. Just got another note in here on the internet from David in São Paulo, Brazil. He says, in Brazil, night fishing is not allowed in most locations. So maybe they have some kind of laws against that. So,
it's probably to keep people safe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Another question came in on the internet, Eric in Boise. Is full sun gear necessary, like flats fishing, face masks, sun gloves? How hot is an average day when fishing for peacock bass?
It is going to average about 88 to 95 degrees and humid, and the sun is powerful. You know, it's pretty much right overhead no matter what time of year. It's so I bring my buff, and I bring, the strongest sunscreen I can get my hands on, and I bring a set of long pants and long sleeves. I'm kind of bad as far as I don't wear the gloves, but I would say that anybody that's comfortable wearing sun gloves, bring them, because there's a lot of sun. Boy, it can get hot.
So just like, dress like you'd fish the flats and the keys, basically, right?
That's right.
Yeah. This is another question off the internet. Arturo in Miami wants to know the length of the flies. You talked about the size of the hooks. What kind of length are you tying these?
Anywhere from about 3 to 6 inches long. I'd say my average fly is probably 4 inches long.
Okay. There you go, Arturo. Okay. And we talked about that, yes, you do catch things other than peacocks when you're out there. So let's talk about some of these other fish to kind of finish up the last few minutes of the show here. You mentioned piranha, and I just want to – and you did talk about the flies you use for them, but I just want to give Jeffrey credit because he wrote in all the way from Kenya asking about what kind of flies he used for piranha. So, Jeffrey, I hope you got your answer there. I just wanted to mention his name because it's a long way off. And I don't know if they have any. You've been to Africa a few times. Do they have any of these kinds of fish over there, or are they non-existent over there in Africa?
There's no peacocks. They have their own sets of cichlids over there and a fish called a bream, which there's about 100 different species of bream, which are a lot of fun on fly, and they do remind me. Some of the species remind me of peacocks. And although they don't have piranhas, they've got the tiger fish, which we've talked about on the show before, and they've got some chompers on them, let me tell you.
Just look at the picture of Jeff on our website, and you'll see that that tiger fish. It's a mouthful, that's for sure. Is there anything more you need to say about the piranhas, about fishing for them, or than we've already?
I should mention, first of all, there's a lot of different species of piranhas. You're probably going to catch silvers and red bellies when you're in the Amazon. You might get a black, you might get a white. And I would say, unless you are an expert at handling fish, which, you know, very few people are, let your guide handle the piranha, because they are extremely dangerous. And I don't mean like if you go swimming, and I do swim every day. I usually jump out at some point and take a little cool-off swim. They're not going to attack you. They attack things that are bleeding and dying in the river. But when they're in the boat, they're snapping away. And if it was your finger or a toe, that's really the fear is, you know, if it falls at the bottom of the boat and you get a little water in the boat, that it starts thrashing around and gets a hold of your toe or your ankle, you're going to have a problem. So be very, very careful.
Enough to cause need for a few stitches?
We carry suture kits on the boat, and I just hope we never have to use them because I don't know. I probably could do it for somebody, but it wouldn't be pretty. Wouldn't feel too good either.
Yeah. Okay, good. And how big do the piranhas get?
Well, that black piranha can get about 12 pounds. I've never seen one.
Oh, really?
I've seen them 4 pounds. But the silvers and the red bellies, you know, they're a pound. They're good size. They could do some serious damage for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you'd also mentioned the arowana, and I think what you did say about them is they like to feed off things that are above the surface, right?
Yeah, and you look at the eyes in their head, and I do have a picture of one on my blog. Their eyes are really on the top of their head, and they do cruise along just under the surface looking for, you know, whatever they can get their little lips on. And there's a spider down there. It's called an orb-weaving spider. They're found all over the tropics of the world. But they're pretty big, and they tend to make their webs right over the water. And if you get into a bunch of orb-weaving spiders, you're probably going to have some arowana around because they just go up and nail these spiders. And that's why I bring my 6-weight, some great big Chernobyl ant or hopper-type stuff. You know, we used to use great big 4s and 6s up here for cutthroats. They don't work hardly anymore, so I have all these leftover crazy-looking stupid foam flies. But they are deadly on the arowana and great fun. And that's – I always tell my people to bring that lighter rod, too, because, you know, on day 3, if you're feeling like your shoulder's giving out a little bit, I say, you know what, today you're just fishing your 6-weight. I want you to go fish for piranhas and – arowanas and just small stuff and have a good time.
Now, they can get pretty good size, though, can't they?
Yeah, I think a big arowana would be about 12 pounds. I've never seen one bigger than about 7, but boy, I hope I get a 12-pounder someday. That would be pretty cool.
And
there is another fish similar, the arapaima, which is kind of it looks a lot like the arowana, and they get up to about 800 pounds. And I've never caught one, unfortunately. I want one really bad, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever caught one. But they do catch a few every year. It's just a lucky catch. You know, somebody got a 20-pounder on a fly last year at River Plate, and, boy, I wish that was me. My goodness, that would be beautiful.
Yeah, add one to your list, huh?
Oh, yeah.
So So how do you target the arowana?
Usually you have to tell your guide that you're interested because you have to look for them. You'll accidentally catch them on a streamer in the middle of the lagoon. But, yeah, you end up going into the woods, and it's really difficult to cast sometimes. You know, you literally be in the forest in, you know, 5 feet of water just looking for some of those spiders or whatever, or you'll hear popping. Sometimes when you hear that popping, you know there's a school of arowana hanging out at the base of a tree. And then I tell you what, if you see an arowana and you throw your fly at him and it's, you know, a Chernobyl type thing, he's going to eat it. I don't think I've ever had them refuse it when you get into them. So, yeah, you just got to tell your guide you want to catch an arowana, and they'll keep their eyes open for him and they'll be listening. And lo and behold, he says, I hear some arowana. And you'll look at him like, how do you hear an arowana? But they hear the popping, mm-hmm. and then you go. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I suppose there, being as to where you're fishing for those, a problem is still them shooting into cover or whatever when you're hooking up, right? Or any tips you can give?
Yeah. They jump like crazy. Arowana leap like you can't believe, and a lot of times they'll leap right over a branch or something and break you off. Mm-hmm. My guess is they can probably leap 6 feet out, straight out of the water like a missile, and they will
do that. Yeah, because that's what they do for a living, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yep.
So. But you can put some heat on them. You know, they coil up like fighting any old eel. But you can put some heat on them and bring them out.
Eric in Boise wrote in here. He says, are there any golden dorado down in where the peacocks are? Or is that totally different water?
You know, there's different species of golden dorado, and supposedly they have some golden dorado in the Amazon. I'm sure they do. I've yet to see them. I did see one in Venezuela, which really surprised me. So, but whatever the nature of that flavor of Dorado, they don't end up being caught very often.
Is that one you've put on your list yet?
Yeah, I've spent quite a bit of time chasing them in northern Argentina. I love them. It's another great fish.
Yeah. Okay, the other ones you had mentioned were the Jacunda. So tell us a bit about that fish and how you fish for that.
Well, he's also a cichlid, and a lot of times you'll just catch them when you're peacock bass fishing accidentally. You don't really target them because you can't see them. A lot of times they seem to be just off the shelf. You know, I shouldn't say that because I have seen them that low water year. We did see them on some almost like flats and lagoons. But they eat the big flies. You don't really have to change anything. They're a gorgeous little fish. They really have some amazing colors. And, again, I put a couple of them up on my blog, but they have a wide range of colors depending on whether they're males and females. And they're cool. They don't get big, though. 16 inches, 17 inches is about the biggest I've ever seen.
Okay. And then lastly, other than the monster catfish, what I'm going to talk to you about, but are there any other fish that you want to mention or that you just put pictures up on that you want to tell folks about?
Yeah, you'll catch some almost like pike or barracuda-like fish. There's two different species of those. There's one called the pakua, which is a lot of times the guys will call them dogfish, and they really are very similar to barracudas. They have some pretty good chompers on them. They don't get that big. You know, they typically get about, you know, 2 feet long, maybe a little bigger than that. And there's another one called the bicuda, which is – he looks the same until you get him out of the water. He's got a much different mouth, but he still has some teeth in there. And you might catch some Oscars. And you this fish called a sardinata, and there's a few different species of sardinata, and they basically are a lot like the shad we have in this country, like our American shad. They're just a South American version of that. And there's one called a traira, or I don't even know how you pronounce it. And depending on what country you're in, they have different names for them. I know down in northern Argentina, we call them dianturos, which have to do with their teeth. But they look like logs. You'll see what looks to be a log land in the bottom, and you throw your fly there because you're hoping there's something else hiding behind that log, and all of a sudden the log just leaps up on your fly. Mm. And they're pretty big, gnarly things. They don't put up much of a fight because they're just kind of elongated fish, but the strike is worth $1 million. They are really, really cool to watch them shoot off the bottom and nail your fly. And they won't move until your fly goes right by them. They're just waiting to ambush it. So you'll cast past them, and you'll strip by, and it looks like they're not going to eat it, and all of a sudden, like a blink of an eye, leech lunges out 5 feet and nails it. So they're pretty cool. I got a picture of one of them up there on the blog, too.
Okay. And lastly, you had mentioned the catfish, and Jason in Pennsylvania wrote in, so he wants to know what flies you're using for catfish. Are you using any scent? Since these fish really use sight to locate prey, how are you using flies? Do they make a lot of noise?
Yep, you want to have flies that make noise. I won't put scent on my flies because I guess then technically it would not be fly fishing, so I've never scented a fly, but I'm sure it would work great. But in the catfish that I've had success with is almost always sight fishing, you know, where you can actually see the fish in clear water, and then you can make sure you can actually physically watch your fly get within a couple inches of his face and give it a strip. And even then, it's not a guarantee because he's exactly right. They're not very good sight feeders. You know, they're picking up noise and smell, you know. So you could throw it 100 times in front of a catfish and he may never move. You just got to get lucky. But then all of a sudden, you know, out of the blue, somebody in my trip will catch a red-tailed catfish stripping a fly blind while they're fishing for peacock bass, and then I'm extremely jealous.
So what size catfish did you guys hook into down there?
Well, my wife got a 24-pound red-tailed cat, and
wow.
One of my buddies, he was actually targeting them with some bait at night, and he got a monster, like, you know, 35 to 40 pounds. And that's really not a monster. I shouldn't say that because there are many catfish in the Amazon that are over, you know, 300 pounds. I did a day of catfishing once with bait, and I got broke off with 80-pound test 6 times that day.
Oh, gosh. That's big fish. That's big fish. Yeah.
It was
shocking. Well, it sounds exciting, Jeff, and I hope some of our listeners can join you in February. That would be fantastic for them. And it sounds like they'd have a wonderful trip. But time for us to wrap things up here. And stick with me, Jeff, because we're going to give away your book here in just a few minutes. And
okay.
We're also going to be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So stick with us. Remember that Jeff's book, Courier's Quick and Easy Guide to Warm Water Fishing, is going to be autographed and remarked. So stick with us, answer the question right, and you may win that book. Just as Lance Armstrong says, live strong, there's a fly fishing organization that's helping women battle cancer to fish on. It's Reeling and Healing Midwest. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature, and a support network, which in turn renews the spirit and hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and to learn how you can support their retreats, visit www.reelingandhealingmidwest.org. That's reelingandhealingmidwest.org. Or you can call them at 866-237-5725. That's 866-237-5725. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd sure appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. So the winners of the drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. And if you didn't register yet for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show. You don't want to miss your chance at getting one of these great prizes. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show via email and so that you can provide us with your information and how so that we can get the gift to you. So first, we're going to give away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. The Federation of Fly Fishers is a wonderful organization to support and be part of. You can find out more about them at fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. So let's see who our first winner here is for the Federation of Fly Fishers membership. And we've got Sean McDonald in California. Sean McDonald in California. So congratulations, Sean. If you aren't a member yet, You are now, and if you are, we'll get your membership extended for you. So congratulations. And now we'll give away a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which you can learn more about at flyfusionmag.com. Flyfusionmag.com, a great place to learn about fly fishing. And it looks like Doug McLean in Alberta, probably right around the corner from where these folks are. Doug, you just got yourself a subscription. If you already have one, which you may have living up there, we'll get you an extended subscription. But enjoy and congratulations. Well, now we'll give away Jeff's book, Courier's Quick and Easy Guide to Warm Water Fishing. And as Jeff has so kindly offered to autograph that and remark that book, so whoever wins that will get a nice little memento from listening to tonight's show. So I need to clear my queue here. One second, and make sure we're ready. Now, to win this, you have to answer the question I'm going to ask, and just type it in on our homepage in that text box along with your name and location, and then we'll let Jeff decide whether you are or not the winner here based upon your answer. And I am, let's see here, this is a two-part question. Give me the names of one of the peacock basses, and also tell me what kind of knot Jeff uses to tie his wire leaders to his fly line. So, not to his fly line, but to his tippet to his leader. Is that good, Jeff?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, his tippet to his leader. Sorry about that. What kind of knot did he say that he uses most commonly? And give me a name of just one of them. Wow. I'm going to have to read this one to you. Jeff, first answer is Cichla is the species with varieties speckled and butterfly, also fire belly and triple surgeon knot.
You got it.
You got it? Okay. So, Dean in Westford, Massachusetts, you just won Jeff's book. So what you need to do, Dean, is send me your contact information either in the same text box that you just typed the answer in, or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com, info@askaboutflyfishing.com. Need your name, address, so that Jeff can get that book sent directly to you. So congratulations, Dean. Good job. First answer. God, I'm going to have to make these questions harder, I guess. I don't know. The second one was right, too. So you just got to be fast out there. You got to be fast. Well, Jeff, thanks so much for being on the show again with us tonight. It's always fun to talk to you about your adventures, and just thanks again for being with us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, and I hope I see everybody out there this winter. Take care.
Yeah, see him at the shows, and I'm sure you'll find Jeff there actively involved as he usually is. So, well, our next broadcast will be on November 16th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, and on that show we're going to be interviewing Brian Chan, and our topic for the show will be Secrets of Chronomids. Brian's knowledge and understanding of chronomids in still waters is unmatched. So join us to learn about how these insects live and how we as fly fishers can become better fly fishers by understanding their life cycle. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Harper Creek Fly Fishing Company, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Flatstein Charters for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. It's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and